You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Risk, Drive, Stories for Everyone, and Other Bits and Bobs. We're going across the pond with my two super talented British friends. Hey everyone, I'm your host Sean Chandler, and you're listening to Your Program Is Your Ticket, a discussion of smaller theater works and the people and organizations that make it happen. Founded by Max Emerson and Rob Ward, both born in Manchester, Emerson and Ward Productions tour their work both nationally and internationally. They champion the underdog and the outside with shows like Gypsy Queen by Rob Ward and Riot Act and Sex Crime, both by writer Alexis Gregory. Now keep in mind that our interviews are recorded at different times to optimize schedules, just in case the audio sounds different here and there. I am so excited to have Rob and Max as my guests, so let's bring them on. Hi, Rob and Max, and welcome to Your Program Is Your Ticket.
Hello.
Hooray! Hello.
How are things in Manchester?
Rainy today, unfortunately. Grey, yeah. But otherwise great.
Well, is it like a summer humid rain, or is it like a freezing cold rain?
It's April showers rain. It's freezing cold.
It's English summer rain.
It's standard English summer raining.
Yeah.
Well, you can see from the view behind me that we're probably going to get some rain today too, but ours is like, it's so humid, it has no choice but to fall out of the clouds. So it's not that fun, you know, sit around drinking hot chocolate rain. It's just, a little bit of background. Rob and I met when both of our shows were at the International Dublin Gay Theater Festival in 2014. And I think both of our shows pretty much ran on the same track. The shows are all divvied out into, I don't know, four or five different locations. So oftentimes there's a show performing, you know, in each one of these at the same time. So I unfortunately never got to see Gypsy Queen because I was doing my show. But we're going to talk about that a little bit when we discuss your projects of your production company. So let's get into that. Why don't I have you tell our listeners a little bit about yourselves individually, and then tell us what inspired you to co-found Emerson and Ward Productions together. And we'll start with Rob.
Great stuff. So I'm born in Liverpool, and I went to Manchester for college. It was sort of through being in Manchester, I sort of started off as the archetypal jobbing actor, lots of various bits and bobs, working on the fringe scene in Manchester and traveling off to Italy randomly to dress up in a fat suit as Friar Tuck in a touring version of Robin Hood. That was good fun. So all these various bits and bobs. When I was younger, I'd always written. And for some reason, when I got to university, and I don't know whether it's because I kind of came from a slightly smaller town outside of Liverpool, and I was sort of met by these huge personalities when I first arrived at university, I always found the acting much more comfortable to do. I always felt like the writing was a lot more exposing, you know? It's really, you can kind of hide behind a character, but when you write something, you get it on a stage, it's there for all to see, and undoubtedly people will read into it and read into you, and I just wasn't quite ready for that at university. But as I was sort of jobbing around, doing various bits and bobs, I felt like I wanted a bit more, and then I started this theatre company, and I had this idea for a story about exploring homophobia in I guess soccer, you'd call it over there, our football, and it was something that had always been very passionate about, being a kind of gay man and a football fan, and it almost seemed like these two worlds never shall meet. And I was mentored by a director friend of mine who was a writer himself, and he just sort of said to me, just go for it. What have you got to lose? Write it. Let's put it out there. I'll direct it. He co-wrote it with me, Martin Jameson. And I guess for me, that's where it sort of took off a little bit. And this play, Away From Home, one person show, was the story of a male escort hired by a Premier League footballer, soccer player, and living in this sort of shrouded secrecy and the ramifications of living that life. And I think it maybe just sort of captured imaginations. It sort of took off. And for me, that was when, obviously, we met Sean in Ireland all those years ago. And the play had a lot of success in the UK, toured nationally, internationally. We went down to New Zealand to perform it. And I guess from there, it just gave me the confidence to go, do you know what? You can write. You shouldn't have doubted yourself all those years ago at university. You can write. And then Gypsy Queen followed, exploring the same theme, this time looking at boxing and LGBTQ, so representation in that world of sport. And it just, you know, touring around, writing touring work, creating, you know, off my own back. And it was about 3 years ago. You're trying to build contacts all the time. You're trying to extend your network. And Max worked at the Royal Exchange Theatre in Manchester, which is in many ways it's the holy grail for a lot of performers in the Northwest. It is our big theatre, and I'd actually got an email back from Max. I'd invited Max, who was working as an associate producer there at the time. You know, as you do. Hi, Max. I've got this show that's touring. I've got your name through so and so. It's about this that. I'd love you to come and see it. Now, you know how it is, Sean. 50% of the time, you just don't get an email back. So when I actually got a response, I was like, wow, a response from the Royal Exchange. Good Lord, what have I done to deserve this? And Max was really positive. Oh, I'd love to come and see it, this, that, the other. So I arranged Max a couple of tickets for when the show was touring nearby. And on the day of that show, I get an email. I'm really, really sorry, Rob. We're just snowed under. We've got this here. I can't get away. And I said, okay, not to worry, but I said to him, we've got another show coming, another venue not so far from Manchester in a couple of weeks. Can I put you down for that? He says to me, yes, absolutely. Get me down for that. Great. I've got him here, I think. 2 weeks later, the day of the show, hiya, Rob. I'm really sorry, but we've got a show opening tonight with Maxine Peake. Maxine Peake is a big star in Northwest Theatre. You know, oh, Maxine Peake. Well, who am I to get in the way of Maxine Peake? I thought, like, do you know what? I'm going to get him on this. I says, I tell you what, Max. Seeing as though you're really busy, how about I come to you rather than you come to me? Expecting that to be the end of the email chain, as you do. But he got back to me and he says, yeah, let's go for a coffee. And I guess that's where it started, Max, wasn't it, really?
I think so, yeah. I mean, I do have to say, like, I'd known of Rob's work, I'd known of the show, so it wasn't that I didn't know of the work or the quality. You know, it'd been touring for some time, and I'd heard really great things. There were just, you know, there's things that get in the way of, you know, unfortunately going to see new work, which is often the problem with programmers and producers and busy venues.
And he knows I'm teasing.
Yeah, of course. But so, you know, however, so we met up and we met for coffee, and we just had a really great positive chat, and I really loved Rob's vibe. I just thought, you know, here's a writer that's a doer. You know, he really wants to progress with these shows. He knows what he's doing. He knows that he has been producing this off his own back and acting. You know, I'm writing in them, but he maybe needs a bit more of the producing support. So I think we went away. We maybe exchanged a couple of other emails. And before we knew it, we basically just said, why don't, you know, I think you were at that point, you were looking at expanding the Gypsy Queen team a bit more for a bigger tour. You were looking for Arts Council England support to support financially the show for the spring tour of 2019. And I just said, yeah, okay, I think we'll do it. And it coincided with me leaving my job at the Exchange at the time and me going into being a freelancer. And that's sort of how it all started, wasn't it? And very quickly, you know, sort of snowballed. So all of a sudden, you know, we applied for Arts Council funding. We got the Arts Council funding. We had a really great first-rate tour booked, in a spring tour in 2019. And, you know, we just really gelled. So, you know, we started with the one show with Gypsy Queen and quite quickly realised, actually, we've got interest in other shows. We've got interest in international touring here. Let's form a company. Yeah. Let's do it. Let's go all in and see what we can make of it. And, you know, here we are, you know, just shy of 2 years later. And you know, we're in a really great position. We've, you know, produced several new plays now and have toured internationally. We get regular Arts Council England funding. And yeah, it's sort of just, this is just the start, it seems. So it's very exciting.
And it was, for me, it was incredibly lucky to have met, to have come up from mine and Max's paths to have crossed at that time, because Max is very modest, but I'll big him up, because he, I think for where Max was at, you know, and he won't mind me saying this, he's a few years younger than me, Max. And when we first met, I was kind of amazed at this. Were you 25?
I was 25.
And where he was at, you know, as I say, within the institution of the Royal Exchange, It takes someone with pretty special talent to get to that position where he was at. And again, he just had that sense of ambition, you know, you get one shot at this, let's give it a go. And I think we both have that about us, and that's just kind of gelled quite nicely, really. And hence we have Emerson and Ward Productions.
Wow, cool. I always tell people who are new to the industry, to the business, that the number one quality that you have to make it is drive. You just have to keep trying. And that is coupled usually with risk, which is essentially what you were talking about, by putting out all of those emails and just hoping that somebody will write you back. You just have to put it all out there. So I think that's great that you just kept trying and trying and here it is. 'Cause you never know. And you really need, you know, you might put out 100 requests, but you sometimes only need one person to answer. And I just think that's incredible. By the way, I want you to say bits and bobs as much as you possibly can in this interview. I love that phrase.
Okay, well, I'll get that into every answer, Sean. That's my to you.
Well, I mean, David and I love London. We go there quite a bit, and well, we did, and we have like Brit TV, Acorn. We watch the ITV. I don't know what the reputation of it is back there, but the ITV, the one that Piers Morgan used to be part of until he
went. Good Morning Britain.
Yeah, Good Morning Britain. That's, and we watch it every day.
Yes. Really?
So much more. Well, we have like a 20 to 30 minute recap that goes on the, on the platform. But, I just think it's a wonderful, city. So is Manchester as well. I think I've been to Manchester a couple of times, but most of our trips are London. And we actually, the last time we went to London was in February, I think, of last year. And it was just before the pandemic hit.
Wow.
And you guys knew, you had more of a sense of foreboding than we did. David and I went to the area where the universities are. I want to say Cambridge. Yeah. The one that has like the big lake on the side of it. And we took that boat tour, and the gentleman who was sailing the boat, if you will, said, how are you guys coping with the pandemic? And I was like, we're fine. We're great. And then a month later, boom, it was just, it was crazy. But we'll get more into that in just a second. What is Emerson and Ward's production's mission statement? Talk about your production record, which you've already given us a little bit of it, but if you can go into a little more detail, maybe some future projects that you're working on, if you'd like. I know a lot of people are judgy about that. So we'll start with that.
Yeah, I think first and foremost, we wanted to create high quality LGBTQ plus art, because I think it's important that we tell as many different stories within that world as is possible. Because I think the thing that's always struck me is the diversity within the community. People have all different stories, all different backgrounds, and there are issues that affect our community that need talking about. But I think there's been a slight assumption historically that that play has a gay character, that's a gay play, and that's that box ticked, and let's now we can get. And I think for us, we wanted to just explore the richness of the community a little bit more, put on stage, you know, voices that maybe you don't hear a lot of within our community. You know, we particularly interested in certainly in the first couple of plays I wrote, you know, gay sportsmen and people from sort of Irish traveller, gypsy communities, you know, devout religious backgrounds. I think these are really important conversations that we still need to be having, you know, within our community. And I guess from that just came this desire for us to represent the voices of the underdog, of the outsider, of the you know, those who might not get often to have their stories heard on stage. In the UK, we are very, there's a real class consciousness in the UK. And I correct me if I'm wrong, my understanding is that it's not maybe the same with you guys in the States as it is over here. This sense of born into a certain class, and no matter, there's a sort of almost a lack of mobility within those class brackets. And quite often the stories that we tell in British theatre are the stories of the upper middle class, mm-hmm. you know, because, you know, unfortunately we've developed this kind of illusion that that's who theatre is for. And we've always tried to make it out that no, theatre's, it's just storytelling. That's what it is. It's storytelling. Stories are for everyone, no matter what your class background, your religious background, wherever you grew up. Stories are for everyone. And I think we've really tried to make our stories, you know, as accessible as possible and as representative as possible. We like telling political stories, but, you know, we don't do it without some humour. You know, we don't want to grab a script and bang you over the head, you know, all Tories are bastards. You know, that's not really our style. We like to make political points, but we always feel that you've got to grab your audience with relatable characters who you can picture yourselves in, you know, in some way. Make them laugh, make them cry, you know, the old-fashioned kind of mantra of storytelling. And I think when we talk about productions, we always think, don't we, Max? Well, what's our audience? Who is it we want to be able to see this? And how hopefully can we make it as widely available as possible?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there might be a good time to talk about some of the history of the plays that we've been working on and give you a bit of a sneak peek of what we've been developing over the past year or so. So as Rob says, you know, a lot of it has undertones of, you know, could be politically conscious or, you know, to tell a story of activism or heroism of, you know, how can we champion these, you know, less talked about stories. So as we say, you know, started with Gypsy Queen. That was the show that sort of brought us together. Had great success with that already. You know, we knew that was a solid piece of theatre. We knew that people, audiences loved it, wherever they were. And, you know, it was a challenging piece of theatre for a lot of people. But actually, the fact that we had quite a few straight audience members come see it, older audience members come see it, sports fans come to see it, and the feedback was the same. They all loved it. So it, suddenly we, you know, we realised, actually, we don't have to be this really mainstream idea or themes for someone else to enjoy it. So that sort of then opened our eyes to think, okay, what are the other sorts of work that we can put out there and be passionate about? And a couple of other pieces we've been working on sort of since we've got together is a piece called Riot Act, which is written and performed by Alexis Gregory. That's done the rounds on several UK tours now and several Pride tours, and will be performed at a couple of Pride festivals this year in and around the UK. And has had a couple of London runs as well. We've co-produced Sex Crime, also by Alexis Gregory, which was at the Soho Theatre in London for a three-week run in January of last year. And then a bit more recently, our last sort of in-person live show we made was the MP, Auntie Mandy and Me, which was written and performed by Rob and was commissioned by the Curve Theatre in Leicester as part of De Montfort Pride in 2020. Since then, we've been developing a little bit more. We've had two projects in R&D. And they'll be continue to be developed over the course of this year, hopefully for a spring 2022 tour. So we've sort of gone back to drawing board this year to think, okay, what can we do whilst theatres aren't open, sort of thing. And then even more recently, the thing we'd sort of seen over the past year was digital theatre and the digital offer. And actually, you know, we had one thing recorded, and we had Gypsy Queen, which was recorded and recently was on as part of the London Vault Festival sort of video club, they called it. So the show was streamed for a week. That was great. But in addition to that, we were able to make a whole new piece called Conversations, which was commissioned by Leicester Curve and the Montfort University again, but for their Pride Festival this year. So that just happened in February and March of this year, and the whole programme, you know, understandably had to be digitally focused. So that was our first time, Rob writing something for actors and a director to be performed and, you know, directed and rehearsed over Zoom and then edited together and put into a piece. And it's effectively, you know, it's a film. And that's sort of our first walk into that world. And, you know, what we found with that is that it was so accessible because obviously people can watch it from home, they can watch it wherever they want. All the tickets were free. So it really, for us, that was a really quite a pinnacle moment, I think, actually, of thinking, this is, you know, part of what we can do forever. And it's such an exciting thing to be able to offer out to audiences. So, yeah.
Because I think there's something about the being able to enjoy theatre from the comfort of your own home as a good starting point for theatres finding a new audience. You're watching something on your laptop. It removes maybe the slight intimidation factor.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theatre, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com.
That goes along with walking into a theatre building, you know, that certainly in the UK, there's a real stigma, I think, around theatre as being this kind of escapism for the aristocracy, you know, and we all dress up in cravats and suits, and we all go to the theatre. And I think that that can be quite intimidating if you're not perceived to be that. And again, it, you know, it really shouldn't be that way. And it, at its heart, theatre is just raw storytelling. And we're hoping that what this will do is, if people can engage with theatre first and foremost at home, they then are more encouraged to go, well, do you know what? Why can't I go to the building itself and go and engage in a piece of live performance? Because we love live performance. We have music festivals. We can't wait to get back to the, and I think it's maybe just trying to make that connection with people who might not think theatre is for them. Absolutely, it is for you, because it's just the joy of live performance. And hopefully that's something that this last 12 months, you know, will make people really, they've missed out on that. And how can we get them back into the theatres when this is, when all this lockdown is eventually lifted?
Yeah, I think it's providing, as you said, people who don't normally go to the theater, some, for lack of a better term, like training wheels on a bicycle. Yeah. Because, yeah, I mean, I know that there is a bit of a stigma about theater, because the very, very teeny tiny part of it is like Broadway, or the big theaters that you might have, which usually just do touring productions in the various cities. And along with that, there comes, it's going to be too expensive. I don't know if I'm going to like it, you know, and so this is giving them an opportunity to get their feet wet a little bit with it. And also realize, like you said, let me just sort of rewind there, that other 99% of theater is what makes up the majority of theater. And that's, you know, local theater, community theater. I really want to emphasize to people who are listening that's all out there as well. And that's sort of the focus of this show, is to be able to highlight that. I have another question, but I have kind of a London question. Can I ask you something about London? I mean, it's I hate to say this, but it's nothing to do with our conversation. I just get so confused. Is it pronounced Leicester?
Leicester.
No, it's one of our stupid English spellings.
Yeah. Very confusing, I will say.
It's spelled Leicester, but it's pronounced Leicester. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I don't even try anymore. Where are we? I recognize that word. David, my husband David, who is an actor, is very good with it, but he'll say Leicester. Yeah. Okay, one more question. Okay. Is Joanna Lumley the voice on the tube telling us everything?
I think she was for a while, but no. I think it's very much a London actor, voiceover artist. But
Generic posh English lady.
Generic RP. Yeah.
They're not hard to find, sure.
No.
They're 10 a penny.
Yeah. There's probably a lot of women and probably a lot of men who can do that voice.
I think you're right.
They didn't ask me, funnily enough, but I'll let them off.
Yeah.
We're always just like, is that her? We're baffled.
Anyway. It was a tough year for her. She had to take what she could get.
I know. It's so hard to be her. She's just had such a struggle of a career.
Oh, I feel for her.
Talk about Alexis Gregory.
Alexis is a wonderful guy. He, we again, he similar to, I guess, what we've done with Alexis, he's a performer, a writer, a kind of a one-man band. You know, he's been putting himself out there for years now with his shows. And I think we just found a bit of a kindred spirit there. You know, we recognised in him someone that had our kind of ethos about the industry. You know, Lex has a great saying for me. When we're looking at potential touring venues, you know, and he'll always say, I'm just as happy with the sort of spit and sawdust sort of venues, you know, those smaller fringe venues where, again, you know, talking about finding new audiences that again, are another way into experiencing live theatre. Mm. Those smaller fringe
community-led
independent venues. Absolutely. You know, we took Lex's show Riot Act, which is a verbatim piece that is taken from three interviews Lex did. The first one was with a guy who was at Stonewall, was actually at the Stonewall riots. The second interview he did with a radical drag queen from the sort of 70s and 80s. And then the final monologue he performs is from an interview with a guy called Paul Burston, who was in the UK wing of ACT UP. So he was out on the streets performing sort of political protests, raising awareness about the AIDS-HIV crisis in the 80s and early 90s. And Lex essentially channels these three different historical figures within our community and performs three separate monologues. It's a wonderful piece of theatre. Mm. You know, 1 hour, Lex on stage, and it's great as well because it's a historical piece. And you know, I suppose it's important as wonderful as the advancements in our LGBTQ rights have been. It's important that we never forget where we've come from. You know, you can never lose sight of that history. Otherwise, as someone once says, you're doomed to repeat it. And I think for us, it's a really important piece to tour around, and especially maybe parts of the UK that are not the, let's say, the cosmopolitan liberal centres. You know, the big cities, some of those smaller semi-rural towns. You know, and you're hopefully introducing new audiences there to these new stories. And also we love it when we get, you know, it's sort of we take a show out into a more rural community, and you know, the sort of local gay community, the local gay pride have made an event of it, and they want to come along and experience the show. And I think you know, we can at times be a disparate community, the LGBTQ community, but I think what's great for us is when you see those people coming along and being a part of your audience.
It's amazing.
Yeah,
it really is.
We're very lucky to experience that, I suppose.
Yeah.
Max, you used a phrase earlier. It's actually two initials. R&D, is that research and development? Is
that's
that
that's right. Yeah. Sorry, listeners.
No, that's okay.
Development. Yeah. So that's you know, it's something that we've been really only focusing on over the past year. Most of the shows, you know, like with Gypsy Queen, Rob had written it already, and it was sort of ready to go with the MP, Auntie Mandy, and me. Rob wrote it. We had a little bit of development time on the script and dramaturgically, and then again, it was just straight into rehearsals. But because of the last year and what's happened, and us not touring for once and not being busy with touring, actually it's given us the time to really take our time with the development of the pieces that we're doing, to again, you know, increase the quality of the work, really embed what we're trying to do in our mission statement within the pieces themselves, making sure it can be as successful as possible. It's actually been a really eye-opening experience for us to sort of take a step back and think, okay, what is our creative process? What is our practice? How do we put together a piece? You know, you can't just write the thing and then put it up the next day. You know, taking our time with it, getting in experts in those fields, you know, to really come and lend their support and their advice on it. And like I say, it wouldn't have been able to happen if this past year hadn't happened how it did, because it's just made us take a step back and think, okay, well, what can we do in this time, you know, if we're not touring live? So, yeah.
Right. Let's go ahead and have you both take yourselves back to that first day. You know what I'm talking about. And I ask everybody this question on this series. It was that first day of the early stages of COVID when theater started shutting down. What was that day like for each of you personally? What were the feelings you were having?
I think a mixture at first of disbelief, sort of anxiety, but also certainly in the UK, quite a bit of anger directed towards our government at first, because one of the first announcements that we had was from our Prime Minister, Boris Johnson, telling people, encouraging people to avoid going to the theatres and spaces where lots of people get together. And the reason, not so much because of the advice was right, you know, as we've since learned, it was the fact that what that did was, is it voided a lot of theatres' insurances, because the insurance policy, in the event of closures from the government, they can, you know, they're financially supported. But because he was encouraging audiences to not go to the theatre, theatres had to then make the decision off their own backs to close, costing them a lot of money. It was a scary time, wasn't it? We weren't sure what the future of the industry was. We weren't sure what the future of ourselves as self-employed freelance, you know, artists. We weren't sure what was coming next. There was about a sort of 2 month period until we got any sort of announcement from our chancellor.
Yeah.
Who for those who might not be aware, is sort of the figure within our government in charge of the budget for the country, essentially. Where that was going,
we had no clue. It started off, all we really knew was straight away venues were shutting left, right, and centre. You know, summer festivals were starting to fall apart. We were planning to take a show to Edinburgh last year, and we were sort of in the final stages of the deal and brokering the deal. And then all of a sudden they said, we don't know what's going to happen. And it took some time for an official cancellation, but they basically said, we're going to have to pause negotiations. Then, as Rob said, it wasn't until about 2.5 months later, so, you know, 2.5 months probably after mid-March time, that we actually got, you know, some news that, yes, freelance self-employed artists such as ourselves would be supported financially during this time in case of loss of work and so on. And, you know, but it was a scary time, because before that, we were thinking, what do we do? You know, we had all these grand plans for, you know, taking the show that we'd just done the show in early March. And then 2 weeks later, we're told you can't do anything now this year. So it really made us think. And I had, aside from my Emerson Award projects, I was working for another company at the time. We were midway through a tour, and it was about 4 weeks into an 8 week tour. And the venue that we were performing at on the night, I think it was Monday, the 16th of March, you know, they said, right, there's going to be an announcement from the government. They're going to say to avoid venues, we're going to suggest that we cancel. And I was like, and I knew that it wasn't just that venue cancelling, that was the rest of the tour. Yeah. All that hard work, you know, weeks and weeks of rehearsal. And it was hard. It was really bittersweet. I think we really just thought, didn't know when the end was going to be in sight. I think a lot of us were very optimistic. I thought, a couple of months, they'll be open by August or by the autumn, everything will be fine, you know. And then we were in the initial lockdown, and then it got extended and extended again, and the numbers were bad, and it was really quite a scary place to be in. So it really made us think about, like, what is our role here, you know, what can we do now during this time? If we can't have live shows on, what can we do for our organisational development to ensure that we keep working, to ensure that we, you know, just keep going with it? Because understandably, people were sort of giving up. Yeah. Really understandably, yeah. I get it. Yeah.
And I think that's as well as important to stress that we were the lucky ones who fell into a certain category where we could be supported financially through government schemes. There are a lot of people who slip through the net. I know both in the UK and in the US who their lives have just been devastated by it, you know.
Yeah, and it's a lot of the legislation had to take months to grind through government. Yeah. And so I'm just seeing within the last few months programs that are coming out to support Broadway and probably the off-Broadway community as well. Okay, so let me get this straight. Boris Johnson, he of the crazy hair.
Yes.
His hair drives David insane. It's funny. It
drives everyone insane.
Yeah. It's like, comb your hair, dude. You're the prime minister. Come on. He gave soft closing advice, if you will, so that people would have to make the decision to close themselves. thereby not being able to be insured by what had occurred. So basically, you know, he didn't call it, you know, a national emergency or give it some sort of a, so that everybody had to suffer. And I'm glad you guys got, subsidized. I really am. I think that's great. And, but I do want to emphasize what you had said after that, which is there's a lot of people out there who didn't, who are suffering, I'm sure.
Yeah. It was, without getting too political, it was unbelievably shoddy. The management of it, I think, in this country in those early days, you know, and it's probably, to me, it's no surprise that when you look at the countries in the world that had the highest death rates per capita, it was the ones that had, you know, some of the, let's just say leaders who were absolutely not qualified to be in those positions, you know?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Trust me, we felt it with,
with
Dum Dum that we had for so long here. That's a whole other episode of
that. Oh yeah. We could spend an entire of the podcast on that. I'm sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Personally, like deep down inside, I kind of want to, what were you feeling emotionally? Was it sad? I mean, I know you had sadness and anger and all of that as far as your production company and trying to figure out what you're going to do and how you're going to go forward. But there were a lot of people that just shut down. I mean, I've asked people to be on the show and they're like, I'm getting through opening my eyes in the morning and closing them at night. What was it like for you internally?
I think that's probably about right. I think it's, you know, because I'm someone, I'm never in my house for long. You know, I'm going to use your phrase, Sean, various bits and bobs I've got going on in my life, little jobs here, there, you know, how it is in this industry. And I like being out and about and to just suddenly almost like a sort of caged animal. You know, you can only stay in this sort of space. And I had no energy to do anything. Now, I think within about a month in, maybe a few weeks in, I saw people sharing, you know, some monologues they'd been performing to camera, people just desperately trying to kind of keep art out there. And I remember just thinking, I have absolutely no desire, motivation. I mean, fair play to you for being able to do that. But I remember seeing this moment thinking, how did you do that? I applaud you. But yeah, it was just a lot of sofa and Netflix and just kind of going, what's happening here?
Yeah, it was, similarly for me. It was grim, you know, it was like overnight, especially because I'd had this other show on and all these great grand plans. And, you know, this is where, you know, although we've run the company together, quite often Rob leads on more the creative and I lead on more the financial producing side of stuff. I was just about to be in my element with getting ready for Edinburgh, getting excited. And I was
spreadsheets, numbers galore.
Yeah. And then we're told overnight, we're pressing pause and it isn't going to happen. I was just like, what do I do? You know, and you do, you know, you feel bad and you fall into a bit of a pit of despair. But, you know, eventually we pulled ourselves out and our strongest thing was we just kept talking to each other and just being really honest about what could we do, you know, and yeah, we're not going to put a pressure on ourselves and say, we've got to achieve all this great work. Yeah. But actually, you know, it was more than anything, we just had our friendship there, you know, and we were able to support each other through that. So I think, you know, and we're both lucky to have that relationship as well.
Yeah. And I don't know how you found it yourself, Sean. Actually, sometimes I think, you know, you're going through phases of it's almost a grief phases, isn't it? You know, and like, well, what comes next? And then maybe you have that moment where you go, do you know what? Maybe just having a bit of time here. Fortunately, we managed to get some financial stability. Maybe actually, as a creative, just having a bit of time to go, what do I want? What do I want to create? What work do we want to be involved in? Sometimes in the rat race of it all, you don't have that. And I think we both got to that place, didn't we? Well, let's have a look at next year. What do we want? What's our creative vision, as you say, coming out of this whenever we do come out of this.
Talk about that very first meeting where you just looked at each other and said, okay, we've got a grip personally, or somewhat of a grip. What do we do now? How do we reset the direction of Emerson and Ward Productions? Talk about that very first meeting. What was that like?
Yeah, I mean, we both had, you know, sort of chatting constantly and regularly, making sure we were okay on a personal level and with our mental health and stuff. And it was only after, it must have been a couple of months until we properly sat down and thought, what are we going to do next? And as you know, I say, we just sort of talked about, okay, this is a chance we've got. We can just wallow and do nothing, or we can think about the company and we can think about what type of production company do we want to be? Whose stories do we want to tell? Quite soon, obviously, during that first pandemic and lockdown, you know, the George Floyd thing happened in America. And we were very, you know, we talked about it a lot. We talked about the issues in theatre, the repercussions of that and institutional racism within the theatre buildings in the UK and in America came to light. And we were, you know, we were very open and honest about it, and was, you know, talking about the fact that we need to help underrepresented writers, we need to help disabled writers, and very quickly we thought, okay, this needs to now be part of our mission, because if we're here, we're only here once, and we've got to go for it, and we've just got to, we've got to try and, you know, be the most representative we can be at this time. You know, that feels right. It feels like the right thing to do and what we want to do.
And I think, you know, for theatre as well, it almost felt like, is this an opportunity now for a redistribution of some of that wealth and opportunity, in that for so long it has, you know, I'll be quite honest, my experience as an actor in outside of London, you know, has been very often your theatres will just go, oh, let's just grab a London actor, let's pay a load of money to get them up, to house them. And it in this kind of transitional period, it almost felt like, I don't think that's good enough anymore. I think for theatre to come back, we need to see more investment in the local creative ecosystems. We need to start looking at that and supporting our own, and much wider representation of people from different backgrounds and experiences, yeah. And it not just be the kind of theatrical elite in this country getting all the jobs, you know, it feels like we need more than that now. We need to be better than that.
Yeah.
The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
It very definitely, in my opinion, leveled the playing field in a lot of ways. People who had major power here, you know, once you take away their full on business, I kind of want to say it's humbling, not in a bad way, but everybody pretty much is on the same level now. We have computers, we have microphones, we have our talent. And you know, like the Sutton Fosters out here are doing these Zoom concerts and just like everyone else, it brought, you know, you talked about the classes of society early on in the show. There were theater there are theater classes, which I'm sure you both feel that, but they're way more equal now. It was an equalizer. Is that something that, I mean, am I getting that right as far as what you're experiencing over there?
Absolutely. And I think, you know, I don't know of anyone that's complained about it being a bad thing. You know, all I've seen is actually, this is just, it's an opportunity thing. And actually, if we can offer out more equal opportunities and have it so that there isn't you know, this just because we've always done it this way means we always have to do it that way. You know, that whole mentality went out the window because suddenly the financial models of these venues and the big, you know, production companies, it changed overnight. They yeah. didn't have the audience money coming in and all this. So everyone's had to diversify their income streams and think differently and outside the box. And with that, I think has come good, and I think has come opportunity for a lot more people.
Wow. Well, I'm glad that you decided to use your time as sort of an incubator for your new works coming up. I think that was super smart. There are certain things that you can do. I know with writing, I was like, what am I going to do now? But I just took some scripts and started entering them into competitions. I personally didn't want to see, and there's nothing wrong with not wanting this, I didn't want to see this go by and not have something come out of it.
Sure.
But that's just me. And again, no shade to anybody who's just getting through the day.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's, but I was like, I don't want to do that. And trust me, I can watch TV all day in bed and sleep just fine. It was like, get out of bed for what? Jeez. Actually, he doesn't. But I can, or he'll say, I can't lay in this bed all day and then fall asleep at night.
Yeah. As long as you've got Tiger King, you're good, you know.
Yeah, I mean, seriously, it's bad. I'm lazy in general, but I'm like the busiest lazy man in the world, but... But it gets on his nerves. So it was kind of fit for me, but even I was like, okay, you know, they need some activity. Now let's talk about your peers. How are the Manchester and London theater communities coping and rebounding from COVID-19? What are you hearing from other people?
In terms of like the sort of small companies, like it's a bit of a mixed bag right now. I think there's some people who have really had to go back to the drawing board and think, you know, do they even want to do this anymore? Because it was, you know, it was hard enough before, and then trying to survive for a year or more before they go back into producing models again and things like that. And then at the same time, there's the venue side of things, which obviously have been very quiet for a long time. A lot of the staff were on furlough, so just not working and just not really much output or not much transparency on programming and how's the future of touring going to look. Now, finally, we're getting somewhere and, you know, venues have a date for reopening. So a lot of venues are starting to do a bit more outdoor work starting 17th of May this month. And they've just announced actually just today that when theatres and indoor entertainment can reopen from the 21st of June, there'll be no social distancing. So that has been confirmed today, which is an amazing thing to hear and to sort of work towards it. You know, within 6-7 weeks' time, venues can be back to their full capacity again. We'll see, obviously, how the vaccine rollout goes alongside, you know, the data and so on, and make sure that it's safe to do so. But if they pull it off and if that is true, then it's very encouraging for us to think, well, if venues are open now, then they'll be accepting work for touring in the autumn and in spring again. And there's just a bit more of a sense of getting back to some sort of normalcy. Like, you know, we'll never go back to it. This is always going to be the new normal now. But, you know, we do need some guidance or some assurance that small shows will tour again. You know, the big touring shows, I just keep getting postponed and postponed and postponed.
Right.
But for companies such as ourselves, you know, we can turn around something quite quickly. So, you know, we can have, say to a venue, we can have something rehearsed, ready to go within 3 months. So for us, it will be easy to get back on the road, I think. But yeah, I think it is a mixed bag. I think some people are going to take some time to get back to that place. And as you say, you know, taking into account, you know, it's been a year, you know, it's been a long time. It's been a long, hard graft for people just to get through it anyway. So then to add the pressures of the touring world and so on, it's quite a lot to think about. So yeah.
I've often said that it's going to be the smaller, more intimate theaters and productions and tours and that are going to lead the way. Because we're having like, okay, you can you can go to an event, outdoor event, 70% capacity, wear masks, indoor event, you know, 33% capacity. There is no damn way that a Broadway show and probably a West End show can survive on 30% house. There's just no way. So,
venues. Also, it's just, you know, we did some financial modeling based on that to think, okay, if social distancing still is in existence, when, you know, there's a potential of a show transferring to London in July, which we won't be able to mention today, but we will tell you about in the future, you know, as soon as we sign the contract. But the hope is there'll be no social distancing and everything will be fine. However, if, you know, given it's quite soon, if there is still social distancing, I just don't think it can work financially. The venues can't support it. They still have their costs. Their costs don't just go down, you know, just because social distancing exists. Right. They still have all their staff. They have their overheads. Likewise, as do we. So it's a very delicate balance, the finances of it. And we've got to really support each other. And that's where we need transparency from venues and producers to talk to each other and say, what do you need to make this happen? Yeah. Not how do we make money out of this? Because right now it's a rebuild phase. It's not let's grow the empire right now. So,
good point. And I think that thing we talked about earlier, Sean, with the emails that go unresponded to, I think an end to that, please. You know, we need that open conversation, that transparency. We need to be here talking honestly. We want to help you. You want to help us. Let's, you know, do this for the good of theatre.
We have a common goal. You know, our common goal is to show high quality theatre and tell stories. So, you know, we're all trying to do the same thing. And obviously, quite often, especially in London, there's far too much work than there is amount of available space. And previously, you know, historically, if you don't negotiate well, then you just they'll move on to the next person. You know, whereas actually now, I think there's much more of a mentality, and I'd like to see this stick around, that, you know, we're all in this together, and actually we've got to work together to make this possible.
Wow. I love that you had said that stories are for everyone, which really, really is. I mean, that's pretty much my kind of my tagline, which is that theater is for everyone. Right. And to open up lines of communication that didn't exist before is a great thing, because you're giving people great opportunities. And hopefully we're getting back to a time, in my opinion, where it's about the work. It's about the level of the script. That, in my opinion, is what needs to come first.
Yeah.
And don't phase people out just because they're not something that you've seen before. I understand it's a financial risk, so you gotta, you know, go with what you think business wise is going to make sense. But I love that you said it's now time to give everybody a chance. Mm-hmm. And open minds and see other people and watch other people. And that's an outstanding answer. How have you surprised yourselves within all of this?
Do you know, I think relating to what, you know, one of the themes of this conversation, I think just slightly more bullish attitude of, I don't want permission anymore to do my job. And I feel, in a way, this is an industry in which we're always waiting for other people to tell us, now you can do your job, whether it's a casting director or a producer or a script editor or whatever it is. There's a lot of hierarchy. And not to sound like a total revolutionary, but, you know, just that sense of, actually, you know, we're confident in what we can do. And that has taken a long time to get to, because you know what this industry is like, Sean. It's full of pitfalls for your ego and your self-esteem. But I think just at that point of going, we are living through a pandemic, and it puts a lot of things into perspective, and it makes you go, you know, it makes you realize how precious life is, and actually, let's live it. if we've got it. And let's actually not think about, oh, well, I really want to put a play on. I really want to write about this, but I daren't approach this person and that building because they are, you know, enough of all that, I think, really. Yeah. Just a sense of, we've got something. We want to be able to share it with you. If you don't want it, okay, fine. Let us know. We'll move on. But I guess maybe just not waiting to be asked so much anymore. You know, I think we were getting there with it, but now I just feel a stronger sense of going, no, it's, you know, let's put ourselves out there. Let's really go for this. And if we want something, let's try and get it. And okay, if someone says no, let's try again. Let's try somewhere else. Let's not be given permission. Let's do stuff, you know, if that's possible.
Yeah. Outstanding. Okay. I'm going to let you guys go, but before I do that, please give our audience your social media information so they can follow and keep up with Emerson and Ward Productions. If you have one place where they can find it all, that's great. Or you can just give it to us in bits and bobs.
Let's do bits and bobs then. Okay, well, if I do Twitter, then you can do the... Twitter is at Emerson Ward, and there's two M's in Emerson. So it's EMERSONWARD. So double M for Mike, single N for November.
There you go. And then we're on Facebook and Instagram, and that's Emerson and the word and Ward. So there you go. And we'll be launching our website at the end of May. There'll be some recordings on there of some of our work and a few little surprises that are coming up right at the moment. So we'll send that over to you as well once we have it.
Fabulous. That's great. You guys are rolling, and I love that. And one of the things that I think is so great about your plans are I can see them very easily transitioning back to, there's a road back to inside the theater with the full audience for you. I can feel that focus in your mindset while still taking care of things as they are now and staying visible. Super important.
And to you as well, Sean, just, you know, congratulations. I've been following on Facebook everything that's been happening to you and David. And send David my love as well. And hopefully we'll be drinking Guinness in a bar in Dublin again soon.
I am so itching to get over there, you guys. I really am. It's just, we went to London all the time. And then, of course, London, I was telling everyone, London is like a great hub if you want to travel to various, you know, European countries. It's so easy to do, or European areas, or I always encourage people to go there. And your theater is just so marvelous and different. And I mean, it's kind of the same as here, but there's a lot of, I think a lot more risk. Right. And it's just, I can't say enough about it. It's outstanding.
Thank you.
Well, Rob and Max, thank you so much for being on the show. You've both been just great and so informative about what's happening in the London, Manchester theater world, as well as other theater worlds. And I'm so glad that I got to talk to you and you could be part of this series. And you're just amazing. Your distinct voices as multifaceted artists have like really broadened the scope of the Act Two Places series. And I wish you both many, many broken legs in your careers as we navigate our way towards the best future for theater. Thank you so much. I just totally appreciate it. And you are a huge asset to your program. It's your ticket.
Oh, bless you.
Thank you.
I appreciate that, Sean. Thanks for having
a great time.
Real pleasure. Thank you.
The pleasure is mine. Thank you very much.
Well, folks, the 11 o'clock number has been sung and the bows have been taken, so it's time to lower the curtain. Once again, a big thanks to Rob Ward and Max Emerson of Emerson and Ward Productions. They're so awesome. You can find more episodes of Your Program Is Your Ticket on the Broadway Podcast Network, who has honored me with a place on their incredible theater podcast platform. Broadway Podcast Network is all about creating an engaging, immersive, user-friendly experience where theater stories of all kinds can be easily found, shared, and enjoyed. Please visit them on my landing page at bpn.fm/ypiyt. That's bpn.fm/ypiyt. Broadway Podcast Network also has an app, which you can and should download. Go do it. What are you waiting for? Your Program Is Your Ticket is also on Facebook at facebook.com, Your Program Is Your Ticket. I'm on Twitter at Program Ticket, Instagram at Your Program Is Your Ticket, YouTube at Your Program Is Your Ticket. I'm also on iTunes, Stitcher, Player FM, Podcast Addict, Podbean, Pocket Casts, Deezer, TuneIn, Listen Notes, and the UK-based theater platform, Thespi. FYI, I appreciate all good ratings, reviews, and subscriptions. Folks, take a little time to visit theater websites and see what they have to offer as we transition through and out of this pandemic. Watch their content, give them all great ratings and reviews, and most importantly, donate, donate, donate. It's the fastest way you can help them. As always, thanks for listening. We'll see you next time. And remember, theater is for everyone.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but
yeah.
Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.